A former U.S. attorney in Michigan says Americans face an unprecedented amount of misleading information, and the number of fraudulent stories continues to grow. But University of Michigan law professor Barbara McQuaid argues in her new book, Attack from Within, that both government and social media platforms can fight the flood of fake information. McQuaid tells WDET's Quinn Kleinfelter there are often telltale signs that certain stories do not reflect reality.
Anything that seems designed to upset you, there's a decent chance that's disinformation. And that's because controlling one's emotions, it's called reflexive control, is a strategy that people use to generate outrage. And so it keeps you on the platform. So it's something that we know from congressional testimony, Facebook allows and even promotes. And it is also a way to sow division. So that which is most outrageous probably should catch your eye. It is worth, when there is something that is extremely surprising news, probably worth getting a second opinion on that. I remember a time I fell for some disinformation that Patrick Mahomes had declared he would not take another snap until the Kansas City Chiefs decided to change their name to one that did not include a slur against Native Americans. And I thought, wow, what a story. And I retweeted it right away. And then it wasn't until later that it occurred to me to go back and see if I could find a second source for that. And I couldn't. And then when I went back and looked a little more closely, I realized that the sender had come from ESPN Sports Center and not Sports Center. So misspellings in names is another tell. You can also tell when you are dealing with what is known as a bot as opposed to a real human online. There are a lot of these fake accounts generated through AI that are out there just to promote some of these false and divisive tweets or posts or whatever they are. And it makes it look like the message is more popular than it really is because it's got a million likes. Well, it turns out that most of those likes are actually generated by the same user through bots. And there are some methods for detecting that. You know, you can look and see that somebody doesn't follow any other users. That's a sign of a bot. Or they don't have a real name. They just have some code number as their handle. The photo is one that appears on lots of different users on the platform because it's not a real person. It's an AI-generated photo. There are also some tools out there that are just beginning in their infancy to help users, bot finders and other kinds of things that you can put into programs. You know, just as AI is a weapon, it can also be a tool to help us detect some of these things.
You mentioned that it can be fought online and that it might take a governmental response to do things like regulating social media. Am I getting that right, that you would think government should regulate social media as opposed to the platforms themselves self-regulating?
I think it's going to take a multi-prong approach. So number one, I do think that there's some government regulation that's necessary. You know, we've got billionaires owning Facebook and Twitter or X now, and they get to impose their own rules, and whatever they see goes based on their own philosophy or their own profit motive. That's just not in the best interest of the public. You know, for example, Elon Musk likes to say that X, his social media platform, is like the town square and people can say whatever they want there. Well, it's not. In the town square, you can see who's talking and there aren't robots who are repeating the message to make it look more popular. And you can tell whether people are booing or cheering, or you can ignore that person and walk away. So it's anything but the town square. So I think that government regulation is necessary to some degree. I don't know that we need government to regulate the content, but we could have government regulate the algorithms that are used to push outrage to the top of our feeds or to require transparency in who's paying for political ads online. I think that platforms themselves should do more regulation internally with their own ethics code, and that could go a long way toward addressing some of these things. But I also think that consumers need to do some things. Number one is we don't have to support platforms that we think are causing harm in society. That's one way. But also the way we behave online ourselves, we could take some responsibility for it. Having the discipline not to pass on false information, even if unwittingly, by taking the time to read not just the headline, but also the story to see if you can verify it in some other outlet. So to some extent, the power is in our own hands.
Some people will tell me that they see a fight against anything termed disinformation as equivalent to censorship, that it's a way to silence those who bring up things people in power don't want to hear or don't want told. Well, what's your reaction to those comments?
I think that is an effort to diminish this threat. Now, certainly, censorship is problematic in this country, to tell people what they can and cannot say. But social media companies, of course, are private actors, and if they want to have content moderation to make their spaces safe to remove things like threats and harassment, then that is an appropriate exercise that does not run afoul of the First Amendment. Things that are blatantly false, maybe you don't take them down, but we can ask social media companies to include accurate information about that thing. So people say, you know, there's voting fraud going on. You can also include a link to a Secretary of State's office for that state to say, for accurate information about voting, please see this website run by the Secretary of State of the state of Michigan.
You say things that are blatantly false. There's so much stuff on the internet in particular nowadays that it seems you can find facts somewhere that'll support almost any theory. In your view, how do you prove to someone that these are the actual facts when they can argue that they have alternative facts that just prove the opposite?
I think it is a dangerous game to suggest that there's no such thing as truth, that truth is unknowable. You know, I mean, maybe the great truths of the universe, like why does man exist and those kinds of things, but facts can be verified. And I think this effort to undermine confidence in truth is part of an effort like we see in the government of Vladimir Putin. And that is, there is no truth. It's all PR. Everybody lies. Everybody's corrupt. And therefore, you shouldn't believe anybody. Truth is for suckers. And what you really want is to win, and you want to gain. And so there's a tactic I discuss in the book called the either-or fallacy, which is to promote the idea that there are only two positions on any issue and only two sides to any argument or to politics. You're either with us or against us. There's no room for nuance. You must be either for the police or you must choose to defund them, and you can't have any room for compromise. And that's where it becomes so dangerous, because we have politicians who demonize their opponents and tell you that they are other, they are bad, they are evil, and therefore you must be on my side or else you're part of that evil problem. This is a tactic used by authoritarians throughout history, but the way it is being used today is so toxic because the internet provides an engine to promote those theories.